Hendricks and Kulikov are out. Everybody else is game time. Or coach's decision. You can pick yours.
So his status will be determined just before game time.
Game time.
Gotcha. You've talked in the past about the many weapons your power play can offer and the different looks. Going back to that first goal last night, Patrick Laine talked about how he's more than happy to play the role of decoy if that's what it takes. And it seemed like on that play, Blake Wheeler has made that cross-seam pass to Patrick Laine a lot this year. Maybe Minnesota was guarding against that. And it, from your perspective, did that open Mark Scheifele up a little bit in that slot position? And is that an example of one of the different ways you can utilize the power play?
If you look at Patty's last power play goal in Montreal, they were in that lane too, right? Everybody's going to do it. They got to get in the shooting lane on them, and it came from Byfuglien, not Wheeler. So it's a shot that has to be respected. You know, it's a standard line kill on penalties. Not everybody has a guy. We're short one. So you have to trade, and when your power play is good, there's enough motion on it to create enough confusion as to where the puck's going to go. And that's what we try to do.
When you get in a series such as this, does video review take on your coaching staff take on added importance because you know that they're probably going to be looking at adjustments, so you want to try and counter those possible adjustments that they're going to be making? Is it like a chess match in a sense?
Well, there are things that every team is good at, and there are things that they want to improve, and that's part of the job is finding strengths and weaknesses in your group and theirs.
Paul, at what point did the preferred method of a power play just in your coaching career with not 2D,
yeah,
the blue line with a forward back there, that configuration, when did that sort of flip over?
Montreal with Koivu. And whether it was 2D, it didn't matter. They were the first power play that we saw have great success running more four low. Right? So it used to be the overload. There was goal line, net front, slot, half wall, and two-point man. And even those guys wouldn't roll very much. The idea of giving anything up on a power play was sacrilege. That never happened. Montreal went to that four low, and they had great success with it. And that was when I thought we started to see more of it. Detroit ran... You know, what's maybe, I wouldn't say new, but you're starting to see more and more teams with players on their natural sides on the half walls, on the flanks, right? You see, it's what Toronto runs. A number of teams now run one and a half, so they've got a one-timer and a natural side guy. Detroit ran that. Datsyuk and Zetterberg later into the 90s, roll up and go downhill kind of concept. So that, but that was part, the first one for me, and I'm sure that there's better historians, but Montreal and Koivu work in that puck. They'd work four low, and we hadn't seen that before.
Paul, the league, it's in vogue now, small and fast. You got to be fast now. The league's really fast, but there's a lot of smaller players. Yours is a big team that's fast, and you play a big, heavy game. Can we look at your team as a club that's telling hockey that being big still okay?
Well, fast is primary, I think, right? So what's changed in the league? You go back to some of those games. Joe Thornton going into Boston, right? They're still waiting for him to put on 20 pounds so that you could handle the clutch and grab. I mean, it didn't matter how fast you were or even how big you were, it's how heavy you were. And for me, it's all the rule changes in 06 where you didn't have to wait for a kid to put 20 pounds on to be able to play. If you could skate, then you could play. It was still, you know, some of the, maybe the anger came out of the game and things started to shift with fewer enforcers where you had to have a guy answer the other team. So as that arms race started to settle back down, we would all prefer, 6'5 and could skate like Nick Ehlers, but you can be 5'11, 170 pounds, and if you can skate, you can play. So speed first. Sure, if you can get a big man that can move, there's only one or two more pieces left before he's an all-star.
So does big and good still beat small and good in your eyes?
I don't think you have a whole team of one. I don't think it'll be built like that. We don't talk about hitting in our room. We don't talk about playing a physical game. We have men that are, that finish their checks. They're big, and that's part of who they are. It's not what we talk about. We don't run for them. We haven't been good in games where I thought we'd really tried to set a physical tone early in the game. We played five games in a row here about 3 weeks ago. We had Dallas come in very physical against us. That was the plan. So we went Dallas, Anaheim, L.A., Nashville, Boston. And the best part of our game was when we skated, not when we were trying to match hits. So we don't talk about it a whole lot. It's just, it's in the men that we have.
Paul, we saw all sides of Dustin Byfuglien game one. First of all, what does a hit like the big one he did do for the tone of the game and for your team?
We're at the World Cup, and we're playing Team USA for the first game, Team Europe. And Dustin Byfuglien's not in the lineup, and I got about seven stories before, so thank God. And then they tell you the story, Thomas Tatar, and of how Dustin at some point blew them up, and they were so pleased that he wasn't in the lineup. So one of those hits, and he's been doing that selectively in the second half of the season very, very well, right? Very, very clean hit. I think you need to know what he pulls off on just about every single hit. Because he can, he's had a cut. We hit somebody in, and it might have been Bullmeister in St. Louis a couple of years ago, and kind of the feedback was, it's a clean hit, but there's got to be a penalty there. It was so violent, right? He's such a big, powerful guy. He pulls on almost every one of his hits, but it is, it's not a pun, impactful in the game. He can change the way you think. There are certain defensemen in the league that you play differently as a forward. You're going to give them a little bit more room. You may unload the puck a little bit quicker. That just makes you smart.
And then the pinch that led to their second goal, is that just a risk that's worth taking, or does it depend on the game time and score?
On every single pinch that we have, there's a forward component to it, right? So that's a piece to it. There is a certain amount of offensive zone time that we generate by an active blue line. That one got away off a block shot. The puck was lost. He thought he could get to it. We give our defenseman room to make that decision. It's not something clearly that we want to have. I believe if the stat is still true, give up the fewest odd man rushes in the National Hockey League in the past season. Our defensemen normally make very, very good decisions there, and our forwards do a great job of covering that off.
Paul, it seems there was a time when a coach would have frowned upon player shooting at the empty net or icing the puck six times late in the game. Has that philosophy changed?
It's not mine. If you can't get it to the red and you can't get it out and it's on your stick, I've got pretty good players at the end of it, take the shot. I mean, it's a 50-50 on faceoffs. We're a good faceoff team. If we bunt it to the neutral zone, it's 100% controlled by them. Yes, it's further away from our net. It's going to burn you every once in a while, but we've ended a bunch of games from that too. First rule, skate to open ice. We tried to do that a couple of times. But I don't want it to mean I take a face-off off an icing all day long over a turnover there. It's no different in some ways than 5-on-5. You're in breakout position. Now, clearly 6-on-5, you're not running the same breakout. You don't have guys leaving the zone. But a turnout over of a breakout is far more difficult to handle than just something that where you're already in a D-zone set. It's on your stick. No, nobody's leaving the zone, but we don't want that puck turned over because we're not in the right defensive position to defend it. Pretty good shooters, pretty good stick, take your shot.
Paul, sort of going off what Speck was on about and whether this is still a big part of the way the game is played now today or not. You used to always hear at the start of a series of a coach wanting his forecheck to lay an investment in terms of the hits to get in on right. The D, on the puck retrievals, and that later in the series you hope that the investment shows up. Is it just as much about taking time and space away and forcing them into quick decisions? Is that the combination you're looking for?
Our decision on what to do with the play shouldn't have changed from regular season to if we can get to the hit, we want to get to the hit. There's way more energy. There's a singular focus more in playoff hockey about what my job is. So those hits get finished when they can. I watched the tail end of the LA-Vegas game last night, and the number, I don't know what the number was, but it was about 40 to 45 hits between the two teams the last time I checked, so everything got finished in that game. If you're running your route and you're in a hit zone, then we want you to finish your check, but we don't want you running out of your route. You're going to be behind the play against a fast team where you're really queuing yourself up for the ref to look at you if it's a late hit. So our rules for what we do don't change. There's more energy. You got more jump, right? You're not playing back-to-back. It's not three and four, so you get to the hits a little cleaner.
Dustin's played with Ben. He's played with Josh. He's played now with Joe Morrow. What's the impact that he has on his defensive partner?
Yeah, he can control the puck very, very well in traffic in his own end. The puck's in the corner with Dustin, and there's somebody there. Rarely do they come out on it with him. If it's on his stick, he can control that puck. So if you got a guy that can find the outs, which is what we think Toby and Joe do very well, call for the puck. Dustin will make that play on his back end. He'll run the reverse. He'll put it into the middle onto the tape. In a 10-foot range around him in the corners, he's very, very efficient at killing plays and then breaking plays out.
Joe said yesterday when he came in, he talked with Dustin, learned kind of what he was about, and kind of adapted his style of play to Dustin's. Is that kind
Dustin,
of what?
As you see, doesn't play off the puck, right? It's usually around him or he's going to get it. So there is some switch offs that you can pick up. It would be true though, really, of playing with any new partner, right? They all have tendencies. They all have things that they do with the puck more times than not, and your partner needs to learn what those things are.
Mo, both you and Bruce yesterday talked about the center of the ice in their zone, the middle of the ice, and getting there. Do you feel like you started to get there as the game went on?
Yeah, we felt we did. It caused us some problems. That idea, well, Dustin's block shot, Nicky Ehlers to Dustin, that caused us a problem. So it's not just the center. Their D-zone structure is very strong, right? And they do a really nice job with their low three box out. So if you don't have speed there, you're not getting anything through. I thought that was true of our whole game in all three zones. As the game went on, we slowly started to skate better, and it'll create more and more. This isn't going to be a big event series, I don't think. This year was really unusual. We played them early, and they had half their team out, and then we played them later, we had half our team out. But if you go back prior to that, it's just an awful lot of one-goal games. Very, very tight games. Not a lot of offense in it. I don't think that's going to change whether we start to skate a little faster or they do. It's going to be a grinder.
Can you think of a comparison speed-wise to Ehlers, and how best do you use that weapon of his?
I think maybe Sammy Kapanen. A fella I had years and years ago, his his speed off turns and his kind of straight line first four strides, they would be very, very, you have to make your decision to defend on those guys early, right? You're not catching them in behind. Nicky's maybe more selective with it at times, but that straightaway speed with it. But I don't think he's the fastest guy on our team.
Who is?
I don't know, 4 years ago we tested and we had Evander here, Kane, who's real fast, and Mark Scheifele was faster than all of them. He just doesn't look it, right? Mark's a really efficient skater. He may well be the fastest guy. Now, Blake's not going to agree with you, and Kyle Connor's clearly going to have an issue with that. But based on testing results, Scheif, I think, still has the record here.
And just curious, on a night like this, how much of the other series will you watch, or are you so entrenched in this one that you'll just be watching more tape of?
The Eastern Conference is more like candy, and then the Western Conference would be like meat and potatoes. You got to get the main meal in, right? Then they start earlier, right? It's 6 o'clock, right? We're all going to be doing the same things. You get 5.5 straight hours of playoff hockey. It's a pretty good night. Yeah, well, just to start, get about, you know, I think you get an hour and a half or two in on that before the West, right? So, yeah.
If you ask your players how they survived the moment last night, most of them will point to leadership, and most of those players will point specifically to Blake. And they'll also say that what you see from Blake now, how he leads, how he plays, is exactly the same as it was when this team was struggling. From what you know of Blake, I can only imagine that when you're struggling, you sometimes question your leadership. You think maybe you need to do things a different way. From what you know of him, how is he able to have so much belief in himself, the team, to stay so consistent?
Oh, it would have to be repetition. He, Blake, early on in his career, had a tendency to have slower starts from a points perspective. And then he found his game, what he's really good at, kind of a theme in our room. You know, what Blake is really good at, he identified and then protected it. That's all he works on, right? He drives harder every shift and every practice than the guy next to him, and that's what he thinks makes him good. So it's actually quite easy for him to be consistent. He comes to the rink single-minded in how he's going to play, and he's trained himself to be very, very consistent with that. What's great for us is that it's a perfect mentor for any young player. Kyle Connor, the benefit that Kyle gets from seeing that every day, it's why Kyle is where he is today. And we think there's Kyle had a lot of room to grow, take 3 or 4 years to get there, but he's covered an awful lot of that in 6 months. But that's, leadership is so much about consistency, about being consistent in how you play and how you treat the people around you. And he's been that way every day, regardless of what's going on around him.
Did you ever see or sense any doubt in him that he could get this team to this point?
Doubt, no. Frustration and anger would be the same for all of us, right? You're you don't like losing. Nobody does. But no, he was, I don't think you can perform the way he does every day and have any.